Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Welcome back, everybody. That song makes me laugh. A flashback to when was that? The 50s? Mr. Sandman. Hey, does Sandman...
go ahead, name that group.
Bug you in the middle of the night? I'll tell you who it is.
Yeah, you're looking.
That's the Cordettes.
You're looking.
1954.
54.
I had no idea who it was either until we found it.
That song I sang in a choir when I was like 12.
Really?
And I had to talk to my mom.
And you probably sang
that
high,
solo,
too.
And my mom would practice the solo with me, and she explained to me what the Sandman was. I guess he'd put sand in your eyes or something. I can't remember, but he'd make you tired.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I didn't like the guy because I hate sand in my eyes.
Well, you'd think that sand in your eyes wouldn't make you want to go to sleep.
Well, if you want to like the Sandman, you should watch Rise of the Guardians.
I've got to get to that.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, it is.
Let me put that on my list. But you know what? It'll just keep me up later. I'm not doing it. Because today we've got the pro joining us right now. Dr. Robert S. Rosenberg is his name. He is a board-certified physician in sleep medicine and pulmonary medicine and internal medicine. He serves as the medical director of the Sleep Disorder Center of Prescott Valley, Arizona, and sleep medicine consultant for the Mountain Heart Health Services in Flagstaff, Arizona. He's written the book Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day, and he is here, folks, to talk to us. So please give us a call, 1-855-CHAT-BYU. What question do you have about sleep for your children, for your families? How do you get that guy that snores next to you to quit snoring? By the way, that's for James. And we are slowly going to figure out everything we need to know to sleep healthier. Dr. Robert S. Rosenberg, welcome to the Matt Townsend Show.
Hi, Matt. How are you today?
Excellent. And it's so good to have you on the show. I feel like I have been needing you for months.
Okay.
And I'm just going to shoot straight with you. So I have plantar fasciitis in my foot. I have tried everything in the world from boots that stretch my feet to whatever. So I tried I wear a tennis shoe to bed.
Okay.
To keep my foot straight,
right.
with a thing inside of it, an insert. And guess what it does, Robert? It keeps me awake all night long.
Yeah,
I don't know what to do. So you probably deal with this all the time. There's a million different reasons people can't get sleep.
Correct.
And yet, in the end, I guess you're here to teach us why it matters and why we're all struggling so much.
Right. So basically, I mean, by the way, you might want to try orthotics. I had the same problem when I got orthotics. It went away. But that's my dad was a foot doctor.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
Oh, see, and I've got all these nice, expensive ones, but they're not the $200, $300 orthotics, so maybe that's the answer.
Yeah, they might work. But in any event, sleep is a major, lack of sleep is a major problem in the United States. The National Sleep Foundation estimates that up to 20 to 30% of the population now is getting by or trying to get by in less than 6 hours of sleep a night. And as a result, we're seeing a real epidemic of obesity due to lack of sleep. We're seeing an increased incidence of diabetes and hypertension. And
Even
a recent study showed that people who slept less than 6 hours had a much higher incidence of stroke.
Now, why? I mean, it's sleep, Robert, right?
Right.
I mean, but why would it impact me? I guess the weight makes it because I lack energy. Is that why I don't have enough energy to stay healthy and fit?
That's part of it, but it's also hormonal. When we sleep less than 6 hours, we put out more of a hormone called ghrelin, which is an appetite-stimulating hormone.
Ooh.
And we tend to put out less of a hormone called leptin, which is an appetite-suppressing hormone.
Interesting.
And that combination of too much ghrelin and not enough leptin leads to obesity, which, of course, is also why it ends up with diabetes and insulin resistance as a result of all of those things occurring at the same time. And the reason why is when we sleep at night, we shut down our sympathetic nervous system, our fight or flight system.
Uh-huh.
And that's our stress system. But when you sleep only 5 or 6 hours, that means your sympathetic nervous system is active about 18 hours a day.
Okay.
As opposed to, if you see where I'm going with that.
Yeah.
And so as a result, your blood vessels, the lining of your blood vessels, and your organs are being basically exposed to higher levels of the sympathetic nervous system, the stress system, throughout the day because of your lack of sleep. So you say, well, what the heck, a couple of nights. But we're talking about some people who sleep less than 5 or 6 hours a night for years. And
wow.
That lack of sleep, you can't make up for it on the weekends, and it takes its toll by causing atherosclerosis and problems with, as a result, heart attack and stroke and high blood pressure.
Isn't that – you know what? It is so interesting because it's just sleep. But
right.
It's what is happening to us when we're sleeping. So the chemistry is changing in us, and I guess the stress hormones are reducing.
Right. Blood pressure drops about 15 points when you sleep because your parasympathetic nervous system takes over. But there's much more important things going on during sleep. That's why it's so important. First of all, a lot of your ability to learn memory is basically uploaded during sleep more than any other time.
Oh, wow.
Numerous studies have shown that if you learn a task and take a nap or have a good night's sleep, that those people do much better than the people who learned the task in the morning, didn't nap, didn't sleep, and took a test later in the afternoon. Every time we do that, we know that. So that's one thing. Number two, during the night, there's a thing we now know called the glymphatic system that cleans toxins out of the brain at a rate that is 10 times higher than it is during wakefulness. And it cleans out deposits called amyloid deposits, which those of your listeners out there who are familiar with Alzheimer's know that's
yeah.
the building block of Alzheimer's. And we now are beginning to think that one of the ways to prevent Alzheimer's, not to complete, but maybe to get more sleep, or at least that people with Alzheimer's, frequently we found out they had a long history of not sleeping more than 5 or 6 hours a night. And then growth hormone is released basically during sleep, during slow-wave sleep in the first 2 to 3 hours. So if you're a child, that's important for growth. And if you're an adult, it's very important for tissue repair.
Holy
cow. If you're working out all day long, you exercise, and you don't get any sleep, don't be surprised, or you don't get enough sleep, don't be surprised if you get the opposite of what you want. You get a breakdown of muscle and tissue as opposed to a building up of muscle and tissue.
You know, it's so funny because we just think it's wasted time. But meanwhile, your body is kicking in. You've got the brain Zamboni that comes out and starts cleaning your brain for you.
That's a good way of putting it.
Don't you think? And it's like because then the ice is nice and clean in the morning and everything is charged, and you got the hormones. I mean, we just sit there and, I've got to go to sleep. As a child, we don't want to do it.
We don't want to. I was the same way. And we also process emotions at night.
Hmm.
Why do insomniacs and people who don't get enough sleep tend to be grumpy, irritable, and have a high incidence of depression?
Right.
Part of it, we feel, is because when you don't get enough sleep, especially REM sleep, which is when we do a lot of emotional processing is done during REM sleep, and when you're REM deprived, that in turn may lead to emotional problems later on. And actually, that's one of the basics now of diagnosing and treating vets and with PTSD.
Huh.
We think that it starts off with a disruption of sleep during REM, which prevents them from responding to therapy for PTSD.
Right, because they're just backloading emotion, and they can't clean it out.
They're not processing it. They're not getting the conversation that normally goes on between the deeper or the emotional parts of the brain called the limbic system and the higher or the cortical parts of the brain, which kind of usually carry on a conversation during REM sleep.
That's fascinating. I mean, think of that. So one of the things that might be debilitating our soldiers, I mean, PTSD is huge right now,
right.
And it simply starts with a lack of sleep and then a lack of ability to process.
Yeah, in my book, I have a chapter devoted to PTSD.
Oh,
one of the things we bring out is the fact that it's very interesting. We used to think that the sleep problems associated with PTSD were just a secondary phenomena, and when you treated the PTSD, the sleep would get better.
Right.
We now know that's not the case at all, that the sleep problem may actually precede. There's a study that was done in the military, the Millennium Cohort Study, and about the people who had insomnia before going into the service or had sleep difficulty before being shipped over to Afghanistan or Iraq had the highest incidence of PTSD when they encountered trauma. So
yeah.
It may well be that the lack of sleep not only is a problem during the PTSD, but in some cases may set them up for PTSD.
Sure, which could easily be evaluated, cured,
right.
Dealt with before they go out there. And yet it comes back to one of these basics, food, your diet. I mean, so your diet, your exercise, and your sleep. I mean, these are basics that have been pretty much, you know, the key, and yet we don't even see them as a trigger, a predictor necessarily.
No, we do not. We're beginning to.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I guess, good, we're advancing.
Right.
We're starting to get it. That's what I love about what I'm seeing in your book is the book is kind of broken down with each chapter is taking on a different kind of issue, a different sleep issue. Is that right?
Exactly right.
I mean, and there's a lot of really, I mean, sleepwalking, night terrors. I had a son that had night terrors, and until I finally learned how to deal with it, I mean, it was causing chaos and fear for all of us. So, well, let's do this. Let's take a break, and we'll come back and have more from Dr. Robert S. Rosenberg. But go to his website, answersforsleep.com. On there, you can find out about his book, but he has articles, basically big blog entries. He's been on Oprah. He's been on all the big shows. He's answering your questions today. So if you have a question about any of your sleep issues, sleep problems, give us a call, 1-855-CHAT-BYU. 1-855-CHAT-BYU. We'd love to ask those questions on the air and give you some help. We're going to take a break, my friends. More with your sleeping problems and the good Dr. Rosenberg when we come back right here on the Matt Townsend Show on BYU Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to the Matt Townsend Show. This song is called Dreams from the Cranberries. By the way, great for your kidneys. Cranberries. Hey, today we're talking sleeping problems. Do you have a hard time getting to sleep? Did you know that in the middle of the night, again, I'm not a sleep expert, but I just talked to one on the show here. Did you know that every night a Zamboni, a brain bony, we call them, comes out in your brain and cleans the ice? Cleans it all up. And if you're not getting sleep, guess what? Your brain's not getting the cleanup. And it's not getting the hormone management. It's not getting, you know, a lot of stuff. And it's going to impact us. And that's why we wake up angry and upset and frustrated and without energy. So we've asked a good doctor, Robert Rosenberg, to join us. And Robert has spent the last 20 years studying this field of sleep medicine. He's a board-certified physician in sleep medicine, pulmonary medicine, and internal medicine. He also serves as the medical director of the Sleep Disorders Center of Prescott Valley, Arizona, and a sleep medicine consultant for Mountain Heart Health Services in Flagstaff, Arizona. He also has appeared on all the major shows, does a lot of lecturing throughout the country on sleep medicine. Go to his website, answersforsleep.com. You can also see his books, Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day. Dr. Rosenberg, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Having a good time.
This is, I mean, it really is. It seems like it's a no-brainer. You just get some sleep. How much sleep do we need?
You know, the magic number, there isn't one, but we'd think between 7 and 8.5 to 9 hours for most people.
Oh, wow.
Not to say that there aren't short sleepers who can get by on less than 7, and there are long sleepers who need 10, but we do statistically begin to see an increased incidence of dying at a younger age. When we get below 7 and certainly below 6 hours, we see a premature death. So we kind of use that as a measuring stick. There was a study recently done, I think it was in Finland. They studied 30 or 40,000 people. They found about 7 to 8.5 hours. They found that the people who slept more than 9 hours did well as long as they weren't sedentary.
Huh.
Those people who slept more than 9 to 10 hours who were sedentary did not. They also tended to get ill more quickly. But the people who slept for less than 7 hours, irregardless of whether they exercised or stayed in shape, when they were followed over this period of time, there was a higher death rate amongst them, irregardless.
Oh, my heavens. Because that seems crazy. I always just thought, you know, the guy that can go with 5.5 hours was just a superstar.
Yeah, until he has a stroke or heart attack.
Yeah, interesting. A lot of them are doctors.
Yeah, after college, and all of a sudden you find out he didn't make it to the age of 50.
That's right. But it's something that, I mean, because also we have kind of this belief in our culture that if you're sleeping 8 hours a day, 9 hours, I mean, who has the time to, what a lazy, but really they're not lazy. They just know their body.
And that's what they used to, I mean, before the Industrial Revolution, before the light, you know, electric lights, you know, a farmer would go to bed at about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and wake up at about 4 in the morning to milk the cows.
Yeah.
We'd get about 8 hours of pretty much uninterrupted sleep.
Oh, those were the days.
Those were the days.
Now we've got iPhones, cell phones, and plantar fasciitis.
Yes.
See, back in the day, that farmer would have just been limping for the rest of his life.
That's right. There were no orthotics from cows.
There weren't. It's a, I think it's a great topic, and I didn't even, I mean, what percentage of America do you think then are sleep deprived?
Well, the, like, the National Sleep Foundation is finding 20 to 30% of most surveys, the big one in 2008, are sleeping less than 6 hours.
Jeez.
And that, to me, less than 6 hours, I mean, in every study I've seen, that is a definite break-off point between health and disease. I mean, you can debate the 6 to 7 hour sleeper, but when you get to less than six, we really do see the higher incidence of high blood pressure, heart attack. So there's a third of the people in the United States who are trying to get by on that amount of sleep on a regular basis.
Well, and they may be driving truck. They may be in charge of a train. They may be flying your airplane.
Well, 100,000 accidents a year are believed to be due to sleep-related. And in a recent survey done by the National Sleep Foundation, one out of every three people admitted to dozing off at least once behind the wheel during the previous year.
I've done that.
Yeah.
But and it's, I mean, your whole family's in the car. And you're like, I'm just going to take a nap right now.
That's probably the best thing to do.
But I mean, but you pull over and go take a nap, huh?
Pull over, take a 20 or 30 minute nap. That'll give you, in most studies, about 2 to 3 hours of increasing alertness.
Holy cow, that's great. 2 to 3 hours of increased alertness. And I guess, too, it would also minimize your ineffectiveness.
Because you're
just going to push through it and be ineffective anyway.
Even better is what we're recommending for truck drivers, although what we're really telling them is get off the road and get some sleep. But if you can have a cup of coffee at about 30 minutes before you're going to drive again, have a cup of coffee, then take the nap. Now, the coffee is going to take a half an hour to kick in, so it's not going to interfere with your nap. And then if you, after the half hour of nap plus the coffee, then your alertness will increase possibly to 4 more hours.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and it heightens it, huh?
And that is, that's some stuff that, that's not that old, actually, but it's been around a couple of years, and those are recommendations we are making.
What would you, how do I personally know how much sleep I need?
Well, one good way is when you go on a vacation, Matt. When you're not stressed with having to get up for work,
right,
you're on the radio, find out what your natural sleep-wake schedule is.
Okay.
So for usually by day two or three, if you've taken a vacation somewhere, you know, nice quiet place,
with
family or whatever, you'll get a pretty good idea of just how many hours you actually need. Because by day three, first of all, your sleep debt from the work week will probably be gone. By day three or so, you pretty much will get a good feel for what time you need to go to bed, what time you wake up, and how many hours of sleep you need when you're not pressured to wake up.
Yeah. Oh, that's great advice. And then, I mean, if it's eight, then you pretty much need to shoot for eight.
Yeah, that's right. Then you should really be thinking, maybe 7 to 8, but trying to do 5 or 6 is not for me. Mm-hmm. And that's maybe why you sleep so late on the weekends. And that's what we basically call social jet lag. People sleep an extra couple hours on the weekends, and they don't realize they're doing it because they're getting insufficient sleep on the weekdays.
Sure. And I've heard you can't really make it up.
You can't. Because, well, like we talked about in the earlier segment, the stress on your body, the blood pressure, the inability to use growth hormone to get your body's tissue to repair, you can't suddenly on Saturday or Sunday think you're going to make up for the previous 7 days or 6 days of sleep deprivation.
Yeah, that just has to happen naturally, running
right,
the Zamboni.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
You can't, it just does not work.
I love that. This is what's so fun about talking to an expert is we can just throw them out and get all the answers. You talk about sleep hygiene.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, sleep hygiene is really developing patterns of behavior and eliminating negative patterns of behavior that interfere with your ability to sleep a full night, to sleep peacefully, and to stay alert during the day. So sleep hygiene, we're talking about maintaining a regular sleep-wake schedule. That's very important. Avoiding naps of longer than 30 minutes to an hour, because if you're napping that long, one, it may be a sign that you're too sleepy, that you're not getting enough sleep, and number two, it's counterproductive because after you've napped an hour or so, it's going to cut into that night's sleep.
There you go. Yeah, you're stealing from the
night. Yeah, the brain has a very nice calculating system that's very, very sophisticated. Also, don't look at the alarm clock. That just leads to calculating and causing problems. Exercise every day if you can, at least 3 or 4 times a week. That's very important in sleep hygiene. And try not to drink that mocha latte after 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, after what time?
12, noon.
So no caffeine push.
Try to avoid, if you're a person who's having sleep problems, then the first thing I tell you is let's eliminate the caffeine after 12 o'clock. And for a lot of my patients, that does it because not all of us metabolize caffeine at the same rate. Yeah, when we're young, many of us metabolize it in 4 to 6 hours. And even then, if you're going to go out to Starbucks at 8 o'clock at night, don't be surprised why you can't fall or stay asleep. But as we get older, we tend to take longer to metabolize it, and some of us are unaware. And also, don't start drinking to help you sleep at night. That leads to a lot of problems. It leads to alcoholism. It leads to people being frustrated because when the alcohol leaves your system after 3 hours or so, you're going to wake up. And so even though you fell asleep because you drank the alcohol, you won't be able to stay asleep.
See, I've had some NyQuil. I have a cold and right now. And I wake up a sloppy NyQuil drunk.
Right, because it's got an old antihistamine in it, diphenhydramine or doxalamine.
Yeah.
That's what all of those over-the-counter things have. And what people don't realize is they may hang around for 12 to 14 hours. So a lot of people who take like Tylenol PM or Advil PM, they want to know, well, why is it I'm still sleepy in the morning and even until 11 o'clock in the morning? Because the drug really hasn't worn off.
Oh, no. And, I mean, if you have to medicate to sleep, there's something else going on.
Right.
And it might just simply be you had the latte at 8 o'clock at night.
It might be the poor sleep hygiene.
That's exactly. That's
so,
right.
Yeah, and the main thing with sleep hygiene is get the television out of the bedroom.
Yeah.
Get the computers out of the bedroom. And don't take any laptops or iPads or cell phones into bed with you. Try to turn the blue light because that's what they give off blue light.
Yeah.
And the blue light is the most disturbing. Try to get that stuff shut down 60 to 90 minutes before you go to bed.
Oh, wow. That's why my kids won't sleep.
Yeah, because they can't produce any melatonin. Melatonin is the hormone that we all produce at about 9, 10 o'clock at night to help us get to sleep.
I mean,
it's a sleep hormone. If your eyes are being exposed to blue light, to iPads, televisions, computers, melatonin production drops to zero immediately.
Mm. See, that's exactly – so last night I was way tired, 10:30, finished reading, opened up my phone to just check my schedule. And literally an hour and 45 minutes later, done. I couldn't sleep.
Well, that's a perfect example.
That's it.
Probably what happened is if someone had measured your melatonin levels, it's amazing. As soon as that blue light hits the retina, the melatonin level just drops almost instantaneously. And then it's very hard to fall asleep without melatonin to help drop your core body temperature and induce sleep.
Oh, my heavens. And think of this. Again, technology, that's a new learning too, right? We haven't known this.
No.
I mean, this is stuff we're learning.
We realize that blue light is the most and the government mandated CFU bulbs. You know, those
which are all blue light.
They give off more blue light than the old incandescent bulb, and that is why many people who have that in the bedroom are now having more trouble sleeping.
See,
than
it's
ever
the
before.
Government. It is the government, Robert. They're after us.
Hey, they don't want us to go to sleep.
They don't want us to sleep because that's the way they're going to get more taxes out of us. This is fascinating. We're gonna take a break, Robert. We'll come back more with Dr. Robert Rosenberg, author of the book Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day. Go to his website, answersforsleep.com. Couldn't be easier than that. Again, he's got article after article, every issue you can imagine, even specific issues, sleep and hypertension, restless leg syndrome, not enough sleep, sleep and stroke. You've got it. It's all on that site. We'll take a break. More when we come back on your sleeping health. This is the Matt Townsend Show. You're listening to us right here on Sirius XM 143 BYU Radio.
Good night, my angel, time to close your eyes and save these questions for another day.
Welcome back, my friends, to the Matt Townsend Show. Holy cow, Billy Joel. I could fall asleep to that song. Just so sweet, suave. Now I'm tired. Hey, we got a great show for you today. We're talking about sleeping problems. Do you have a sleeping problem? Or do you really just have a problem with the fact that you had a big Mexican dinner at 9:45? and you're trying to go to bed. That might be causing you a problem. We've asked our guest today, Dr. Robert Rosenberg, to join us. He has been working on this sleep problem and in the field of sleep medicine for over 20 years. He's a board certified sleep medicine, pulmonary medicine, and internal medicine expert, and serves on a bunch of boards, works at a bunch of different locations and hospitals, and has written the book that we are discussing today, Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day. And he offers really an awesome website. I get to look at a lot of websites, and this is truly one that is a resource for you. If you have sleeping issues, if your family has sleeping issues, go check it out, answersforsleep.com. Dr. Rosenberg, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Matt.
So good to have you. And as we're talking here, give us some more give us some more solutions. What should we be doing to have that sound sleep every night?
Okay. We talked about, obviously, about turning off the blue lights.
Yep.
And things. We talked about caffeine and good sleep hygiene.
Get rid of the big meal, maybe.
Right. Now let's talk about our attitudes. We can't bring our worries into the bedroom.
Okay, yeah.
Can't bring work into the bedroom. Can't bring your worries to the bedroom. Don't get into fights before bed. Don't get involved in business with a business associate within an hour of bedtime.
Yeah.
And if you're a worry wart, then learn to write your worries down. In my book, we talk about something called constructive worrying. You write down your problems at about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening. You write down your solutions. You put it in the desk drawer, and you try to leave it there.
That's a great idea. I mean,
yeah,
like,
it sounds, you know.
But you'll come back to it tomorrow. It's going to be there tomorrow.
And do it again or whatever. But don't bring it into the bedroom. Try to train yourself not to bring your worries and problems into the bedroom. And if you do, then you're going to have a heck of a time falling asleep. And also, try not to look at that alarm clock. Put the alarm clock in a place where it'll wake you up in the morning, but you don't want to be looking at it constantly calculating how many hours
That's
am right. I going to sleep.
Three more hours.
That just makes it impossible to fall asleep, leads to higher levels of stress hormones and more anxiety.
I love that. That's great advice. Hey, we have a couple callers, Doc,
sure.
I wanted you to talk to.
Yeah.
Let's get to Byron. Byron's on the line. Byron, are you there?
Yes, I am.
How are you, my friend? What's your question?
My question is, the high school that my daughter goes to, they're talking about changing the start time to later. Right now they start at 7:30, and they're saying it's because of the circadian rhythms that teenagers have, and they're saying the benefits of that is that they'll learn better, kids will have fewer depression, and they'll have fewer accidents and those kinds of things. And I wondered what the doctor thinks about that.
Great, great question, Byron.
Good question. I would say yes, yes, yes to all of that. And I see it because about 7% of high school adolescents have a circadian disorder called delayed sleep phase, where their circadian clock in your brain, hypothalamus, actually begins to shift from 8 or 9 o'clock at night till 11, 12, sometimes 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
They really have no power over it. I mean, it's a biological
shifted.
Change that
yeah.
goes on.
Is it a teen thing? What is it? Is it just what happens when we're maturing?
Yeah, well, in 7% to 10% of kids, most adolescents, when they hit the teens, they get a phase change, we call it in sleep medicine. That is, they literally, I talked to you about the melatonin. So,
yeah.
Whereas at the age of 11, they were putting out melatonin at 9 o'clock at night, Matt. At the age of 15 or 16, they're not putting it out to 11 o'clock or midnight.
Oh, so they're not even tired till midnight.
It's a physiological thing. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
And it's not for all of them, but a lot of them. So
okay.
Those kids who have this and are made to get up at 6:30 or 7 o'clock in the morning, they're trying to get by on 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night, no fault of their own. And so for those children, a later start time really works, cuts down on insomnia, mm-hmm. cuts down on suicide, depression, and they do better in school. So I'm a great, great believer in that.
Well, and it's funny. Did you say 7% have the delayed sleep phase?
Yeah,
problem?
At least 7% of children on average
yeah.
have that. It will go away in most of them by the time they become adults. But remember, those who don't end up being our shift workers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's probably true, huh?
The people who tell you, you know, from the time I was 15, I was a night owl, and I've always done
that's
better
it.
Working at night.
Oh, that's good. Hey, we got another caller for you, Doc. Sure. Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome to the Matt Townsend Show.
Howdy, guys.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys?
Good. We got a little sleep problem, Bob?
It's related to a sleep problem. I heard you mention earlier in the show, and it wasn't the first time I've heard this, that when you get lack of sleep the next day, you have more of an appetite.
And
I'm kind of the exact opposite. Actually, when I get lack of sleep, I'm extremely nauseous the whole day.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so I didn't know if the doctor knew. Is there something more to that? Do I just need to always get enough sleep, or is there something more there? That's going on since it doesn't follow the norm.
Great question.
We know that's a good question. We know that people who have inflammatory bowel disease. I mean, for just a moment, people who suffer from irritable bowel syndrome and who have ulcerative colitis and regional Crohn's disease, when they get lack of sleep, and studies are coming out, they have flare-ups of their intestinal disease much more frequently. And so the GI. So in your case, you know. Unlike some people whose appetite increases, you get nausea, but that just reinforces the fact that we're seeing studies that are showing that our GI tract is very much susceptible in many different ways and in many different forms to lack of sleep.
I mean, that could be, I guess, the chemicals, the hormones.
Sure. I mean, that's the way he responds to lack of sleep, but the fact that he gets nauseated when he doesn't get enough sleep tells you there's definitely a cause and effect.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. I mean, that's his body talking to him.
Right. Exactly,
so we need
right.
to pay attention to that.
One of the major symptoms of jet lag. So is nausea. A lot of people when they travel to England, they for the first few days, they can't digest, they can't eat, and they're constipated or nauseated.
And we think that that's just because of, I guess, you know, flying to 30,000 feet at 300 miles an hour.
Right.
But it really might simply be we're not sleeping right. We're upside down.
And even, I don't want to get too technical, but we're finding that there are melatonin receptors in the intestinal tract, which are actually antioxidants. And we think, at least this is what the GI guys who are studying Crohn's and ulcerative colitis and lack of sleep, think that it may be the inability or the lack of melatonin production that in part may cause the flare-ups of bowel disease.
Oh, my heavens.
Never thought of that before.
Well, what if we tied the bowel diseases to sleep? I mean, if all of a sudden there's a connection, I mean, there's got to be.
Oh, there is.
We're such a basic human, yet complicated, but we don't even understand the basics, and yet we're so confident we don't need sleep.
Never a day when I don't open up the you know, a journal or something and go, oh, my God, I can't believe that.
There's something new.
Something new.
Talk about – we've only got about a minute left.
Sure.
Give us what you think – what's the one thing we should all be doing if we feel like we're getting behind?
Stop trying to burn the candle at both ends.
Okay.
Start to make sleep a priority. Understand that sleep is just as important as the pill you take for diabetes or blood pressure or the vitamins you take to prevent yourself from getting heart disease or stroke. So make sleep a priority. Understand that. Try to learn your own biorhythms and basically don't fight sleep. It's not a waste of time. It's actually a very important time.
And make it I like how you set it up. It's its own place. You go there, you leave everything else out of it, and you go to the bedroom, and you're there to sleep.
That's exactly right. Let your body and brain repair, and you'll be a much healthier and happier human being.
Oh, well, there you have it. Dr. Robert S. Rosenberg, we so appreciate you. Again, everybody, I guess we can get the book anywhere, right, Robert?
Yeah, it's available on Amazon.com. You can get it there, or BarnesandNoble.com, and it's in some of the bookstores, and it's called Answers for it's called Sleep Soundly Every Night, Feel Fantastic Every Day, and yes, you can get it on Amazon.com.
Appreciate it. Dr. Robert S. Rosenberg's his name. Go to his website, AnswersForSleep.com. Awesome insight. Folks, this is your life, for heaven's sakes. Sleep. Oh, sure, it's easy for you to say. No, get some sleep. We're going to take a break. When we come back, continue this discussion about healthier living today and our sleep. This is the Matt Townsend Show. You're listening to us right here on BYU Radio.